Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Syndicated News. The time is 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the evening, and I'm Raymond F. Rivas, Chief Financial Editor. The name of our firm is Atherton Wealth Planning in Atherton, California. You may contact me on my email at raymond.rivas@lpl.com. Again, you're listening to syndicatednews.net. And our guest this evening is going to be Mr. Robert Koenigsberg of the firm of SleepQuest, Inc. Robert, are you there?
I'm here.
And good evening. I welcome you for being our special guest this evening. Robert, why don't you describe who SleepQuest is and what it does?
Okay, sure, Raymond. So SleepQuest is a company that focuses on diagnosing and treating people with what's called obstructive sleep apnea. And there are 30 million Americans that suffer from this disorder. It's become a bit more in the news recently because people like Reggie White, the football player from the Philadelphia Eagles, and some of our major disasters like the Exxon Valdez and some other disasters were caused by people that had sleep apnea. And so anyway, what our company does is we diagnose people in the home, and then we treat them with whatever the doctor feels is the best treatment for that patient. But we specifically work with the most common treatment form, which is called continuous positive airway pressure. And basically what it does is it creates a splint in the airway non-invasively, and basically by sending positive pressure or air through a mask in through the nose down into the airway, it blocks any obstruction that is occurring due to snoring and stoppages of breathing due to obstructive sleep apnea.
Well, what exactly, Robert, is sleep apnea itself? Just a very simple explanation. What is it?
Yeah, sleep apnea is the definition of obstructive sleep apnea is a cessation of breathing that lasts for 10 seconds. So what causes the cessation of breathing? It can be, most often, it's due to the fact that there's redundant tissue up in the upper palatal area in the palate, and during sleep, as you're on your back or your side, it ends up that the tongue and the soft palate have a tendency to, when you're relaxed, to close off the airway and cause these events to occur.
I see. Just out of curiosity, you know, to get a better understanding, do you have a website that if someone want to learn more about sleep apnea and how it works, would you mind giving that website on the air?
Sure. It's sleepquest.com. So, of course, www.sleepquest.com.
How do you spell SleepQuest?
SleepQuest.com.
Well, how did you, what drove you to start SleepQuest.com? How did you get started?
I started the company close to 15 years ago, and the reason that I started it is my father actually had a poor experience in a sleep lab, and his experience got even worse when he was sent to a company to receive treatment. And so what I noticed was that the care was tremendously fragmented, and that as a lot of different things are done in healthcare, we tend to send patients to a hospital to do one thing, and then we send them somewhere else to do something else. And and anyway, I thought, well, what if I could create a company that would create accountability for the most important person in the process, that being the patient? And so I created something out of nothing. Basically, we had sleep laboratories that diagnose patients in a hospital-based setting most of the time, and we have home care companies that provide treatment. But nobody is really doing both aspects, both the diagnosis and treatment, in the comfort of the patient's home versus having to go to a sleep laboratory. And I don't know, Raymond, if you've talked to anybody that's slept in a sleep lab before, but they don't describe it often as the most comfortable experience.
Well, I could imagine, simply because you're in an unfamiliar area, you don't know who these people are. And what I have seen, and I've only seen this in films, whereby they put these electrical equipment on you, and it makes you very, very uncomfortable, and you're sleeping in an artificial way of sleeping. You know, Robert?
Right, and you're often in a room with white walls, and a nurse is coming in, a technician is coming in every 2 hours to check on you, and you're basically in a immobile state because you have electrodes and various monitoring equipment from your feet all the way to your head. And so what we've done is...
uncomfortable.
Yeah, so it's really... I've yet to talk to somebody that said, oh, you know, I really had a wonderful time in the sleep lab.
I can imagine. Robert, tell us a little bit about you specifically. Give us a little bio about who Robert Kenigsberg is.
Well, I started in the medical field about 20, 25 years ago, and I was actually selling cardiac equipment, Holter monitors, and diabetic neuropathy devices and various medical equipment. I was selling this to primary care physicians. These primary care physicians that I was visiting in Northern California would say to me, you know, the big disease state of the 21st century is going to be sleep disorders, and specifically sleep apnea. And you would be smart to start learning more about it at this point. So I took their advice, and I went to the Stanford Medical Library, and I learned quickly that Dr. William Dement was the founder of the first sleep lab in the world at Stanford back in 1970. So it's a relatively new disorder. You know, heart disease has been around for hundreds of years, and so has diabetes and so forth. But sleep disorders and sleep apnea has only been really around for the last 38 years or so. And so I did my research there, and I started working with some of the doctors that were interested in portable monitoring, and I started distributing a device for portable testing. And something about sleep medicine just fascinated me. You know, we as human beings are often very conscious of what we do during the daytime.
Yeah.
But what about when we sleep? And the whole mystery of sleep, and why is it that we spend a third of our lives sleeping? Why do we need this 8-hour period to restore the body? What is REM sleep? All these questions were tremendously interesting to me. And so in 1999, what I did is I wrote a letter to Dr. Dement, and I explained to him that my interest in getting access to sleep medicine to the primary care physician was very much the same as his desire. And I sent it on a Friday, and on Monday he called me up Monday morning and said, you know, we need to get together. So we got together, and we've been working close to 10 years together. And he's a wonderful man. He's emeritus at Stanford. I mean, he's been doing this for, as I said, for close to 40 years. And he's a big believer in what we do, and especially the fact that we focus on outcomes. And when I say outcomes, what I mean is how people end up doing with treatment. Because as you can imagine, wearing a mask and going to bed and having your wife look at you and you look, have this tube coming to your face, you kind of look like an elephant. And so they look at you and it takes some adjustment. Now, the wife or husband, the spouse, often will trade the sound of the machine for the sound of snoring, which has been banishing them and keeping them often out of the bedroom because of the loud noise that snoring brings. So by creating this splint in the airway, this idea of this air being able to get through, it allows people to wake up restored and have a tremendous amount of energy. And so when they wake up, they feel like new people.
Well, it sounds to me that you got pretty immersed at the library and getting to know Dr. Mentman. Dr. DeMent must have been very exciting. What did you? Are you married?
Yeah.
What's your wife's name?
What's her name?
Yes.
Yeah, her name is Maria Teresa.
Maria Teresa.
My wife. Yeah, she's from the old country. She's from Italy.
Yeah.
And
do you have children?
And I have two wonderful daughters. One will be entering UCLA in about a week. We're driving to take her there. And then
and
the other
what's
is
her name?
Her name is Valeria.
Valeria.
Yeah.
And your second daughter?
Pardon me?
And the second one?
And the second one is Ashley.
Ashley.
So,
well,
what we did when we named our kids is, since my wife is full-blooded Italian and came to this country when she was 23, since we named them with the first one with an Italian first name and an American middle name. So her middle name is Christine. So it's Valeria Christine. And then Ashley, we named her with an Italian middle name. So it's Ashley Francesca.
Well, those are beautiful, beautiful names. But getting back to your business, I noticed that you said that when you first started, you met the Dr. DeMent. My question is, how were you received by the medical profession and hospitals who had done it a different way for decades? What was the reception when you came on the scene?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know, because it's kind of unspoken, but even to him, he's looked at as the father of sleep medicine, and all his disciples is what we call them in the field that he's taught, just hundreds of people that he's taught over the years, kind of look at him kind of perplexed. Why are you doing this? Why are you getting involved with this company that takes care of people in the home and then works towards getting them well? And I'm not him, but he must many times have gotten together with these people and explained to them that the focus of SleepQuest is really on getting people well. And it's not so much how the test is done. It's not where the test is done. It's really determining that a person has this disorder, but more importantly, getting them treated so that they can enjoy the beauties of life and have energy. I mean, we have several patients that come back to us and say, my spouse has never laughed since I met them in high school. Or just some, I haven't seen them have any interests outside of work since we were married. And now he's got himself a new computer, he's learning that, he's taking a foreign language, he's doing this and that. So it's tremendously invigorating and tremendously satisfying to me, and this is the reason I got into this, was to help human beings. Because that's, I want to leave a legacy, and I want to make the world a better place, like most of us do. And this is a great way to do it, because now we have 6,000 patients that we've seen over the years, and I can go to bed at night and feel, before I go to sleep, I can think to myself, wow, I've helped 6,000 people get a better night's sleep, improve their daily functioning and their daily lives.
Robert, I'm sure that's a wonderful way to feel when you think about it. At the end of the evening, when you're about to go to sleep, and you say, you know, success is more than the money. It's what you do with the people and what you do for people. I'm going to ask you, just hold on a second. I'm going to identify our radio station for a moment or two. This is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rivas. I'm the Chief Financial Editor, and the name of our firm is called Atherton Wealth Planning. You can contact me at my email address, raymond.rivas@lpl.com. You're listening to syndicatednews.net. And back to our guest, Robert Kainsberg, Chief Executive Officer for SleepQuest, Inc. in San Carlos, California. Robert, tell me about the one-source continuum that you have on your literature. What exactly is that?
What it is, back to what I was saying earlier, is mm-hmm. patients get tremendously frustrated in all sorts of areas of healthcare with the fragmentation of healthcare. When I say that, what I mean is being sent from this specialist to that specialist, for this company to provide the equipment, this company to provide a consultation, this company to provide a test. And what happens is the patient often gets in a game of pickle between mm-hmm. all of these different entities. And so there's no one that says, you know, I'm going to get you well, and if I can't get you well, then nobody can get you well. And I will do all, I mean, our focus and our goal is to work with the patient until mm-hmm. the point is that if we, rarely it happens that we can't, the type of treatment we provide does not mm-hmm. help them. And so we contact the referring physician and let them know and explain what the other options are to the patient, because this continuous positive airway pressure mm-hmm. is not the only treatment. There's also surgery, which can be quite expensive and much more invasive, and there's also different forms of oral appliances, which mm-hmm. are kind of dental appliances that are used to project the lower jaw so that to increase the amount of space in the airway to allow more air to get through so that the patient, the rattling of the snoring sound is the rattling of the, is the vibration of the uvula against the soft palate. So often patients want to decrease the sound of snoring. What's really important in what we do is to...
Is that a symptom of sleep apnea, snoring?
Yes, yes. Not all people that snore have mm-hmm. sleep... not all people that snore necessarily don't have sleep apnea. I mean, sleep apnea is made up of patients that snore and patients mm-hmm. that don't snore. In fact, I myself have the disorder, and I don't snore at night.
You would not even suspect that, because you don't have I would think snoring is an indication. You're saying that no, it may not be, and you're an example of it.
Right. And I was, you know, I'm 45 and I was getting into my early 40s and mm-hmm. I was starting to be so tired during the day I couldn't even function, really. And so then there must be something wrong with me. So I took one of my devices home, tested myself, and I determined that I had sleep apnea mm-hmm. and went on treatment. And now I can't live without it. If I go on a business trip, I take the device with me, because if I don't, I know I'm going to be pathetic the next day. I'm going to be extremely fatigued.
Well, if someone feels this way, so, you know, maybe I'd go to my physician and they call you up and say, you know, I think I have sleep apnea, or I want to find out if I have it. How long do they have to wait before they'd give you a telephone call and you would actually do the analysis to find out whether or not they are, you know, candidates for this.
So what we do, what we offer for free, is a questionnaire on our website that allows people to fill it out, and instead of having to wait for a response, it gives you the pretest likelihood right after you fill it out. It gives you your pretest likelihood of having a sleep disorder. And
so again, we do. So that's available for free for anybody who wants to.
Right.
We will give you a. You know, a looky up on the internet. Would you do me a favor? Would you give me that website again so people who are listening to the radio show will be able to log on for free and find out whether or not they have you know, propensity for having a problem for sleep apnea.
Sure.
Would you mind
so
giving me your
www.sleepquest, one word, .com. And one thing to keep in mind is that how we're kind of revolutionizing sleep care is that we're allowing the primary care physician to manage sleep apnea the way that they now manage diabetes and asthma. And the way they manage those disease states is to create a disease management process to get people well. And we do the same thing as we show that we inform the primary care physician that it's in their interest and that they have the knowledge to be able to help these people. And because there's so many people out there and so many people, so many men especially, don't want to. I mean, their wives are on them, and they're saying, go to the sleep lab. And they're saying, I'm not going to go to the sleep lab. I don't want to take a day off my out of my life. I don't want to go and sleep in some foreign environment and have them analyze me. I just don't want to do that. So what we offer is the ability to have this test done in the home, and we're not writing the prescription. So for the test, we're basically empowering primary care physicians to manage patients with sleep apnea. And
do you find that the physicians go ahead and routinely look for sleep apnea in a regular health exam?
No, not unless the patient is severely obese and falling asleep in front of them, for the most part.
Really?
It's not something that routinely they ask. A few simple questions. Do you snore? And are you tired during the day? With just asking those two questions. I mean, let me ask a few more questions. Do you have high blood pressure? If you have high blood pressure, there's a good chance you have sleep apnea. If you wake up in the morning with headaches, there's a good chance you're suffering. If somebody has noticed that you stop breathing at night while you sleep, your spouse has noticed that you stop breathing, that's a great indication. Now, sleep apnea is not the only sleep disorder, but what I've done.
What do you mean? Is there a difference between sleep apnea and, I think you used the word obstructive sleep apnea? Are they the same thing?
Well, there's basically three types of sleep apnea. There's obstructive sleep apnea, there's central sleep apnea, and there's what's called mixed sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea is an obstruction, like you plug up a garden hose. That's an obstruction, and the water is flows very, very slowly. Central sleep apnea is when the brain turns off the diaphragm neurologically, so it has nothing to do with obstruction. It's basically the brain telling the body to stop breathing. And mixed apnea starts as a central apnea. So it starts as this neurologic, and then about 5 seconds into it, it turns into an obstructive event. So then you start going.
Well, that doesn't sound very flattering. You said earlier in the broadcast, you gave a number of the number of people in the United States who have sleep apnea. At least it's, how many do they guess or they estimate have sleep apnea in this country?
Well, there are 30 million that Dr. Dement and I estimate have it, and the sad part is only 10 to 15% of them have been diagnosed.
You mean 90% of the people have not been diagnosed with sleep apnea?
Right.
If you have this obstructive sleep apnea, what could lead to if it's not treated properly?
Oh, that's a great question, because the ramifications of sleep apnea are humongous. It can lead to a number of things. It can lead to hypertension, which then leads to a heart attack. It can lead to what's called congestive heart failure. Basically, Raymond, think about the heart as a muscle in your body. And if there's a blockage in the airway, then we're not getting air to our lungs. So our oxygen in our blood goes from 95% to 75% during the night.
Good.
Well, the heart is, we're a closed system. We don't have blood going all over the place. So we're a closed system. So the body has to react to reoxygenate the system to get it back to 98%. So how does it do that? Well, it does that by the heart as a muscle beating faster. What is that? That's the definition of hypertension. Now, beyond hypertension, if you take a muscle and you go to the gym and you work on your bicep and you do tons of reps with your bicep over a long period of time, what happens? Your bicep grows. Well, the heart grows. And it's kind of an oversimplified, physicians in the audience won't like me to say this because it's very oversimplified, but that's the definition of congestive heart failure. And there are millions of people in the United States that unfortunately have this disorder, because if sleep apnea is not diagnosed and treated as a preventative measure, then it can develop into this later in life.
You know, do you actually stop breathing in your sleep when you have sleep apnea?
Yes, and you can. We've seen apneas last up to 120 seconds, so 2 minutes.
Oh,
and
my God.
People, we've seen studies where people stop breathing 100 times an hour. So
they stop breathing 100 times an hour?
Right. So if you stop breathing 60 times an hour, and apnea, as I said earlier, is the definition is it lasts for 10 seconds. So if you stop breathing 60 times an hour, that means once every minute you stop breathing for at least 10 seconds. Well, if you do that for 7 hours, that's 420 times that you stop breathing. Each time you stop breathing, you wake yourself up, not consciously, but subconsciously. It's what's called an arousal. So you wake yourself up. And what happens when you wake up in the morning after 420 arousals during the night? What happens is you're more tired when you get up than when you went to bed. And this is just continues. It's a vicious circle. It just goes on and on and on. So what during our titration test, where we work with the patient to get them on the right treatment device, is we take those 420 events down to less than 20 events or less than 10 events for the entire night. People wake up and they're bouncing off the walls with so much energy because they haven't felt like this since they were 6 years old.
Well, they haven't slept very much. Just out of curiosity, what do you see as a reaction people have when they're diagnosed as having sleep apnea? Are they in denial of it? Are they glad they found out what's wrong? What do you normally see, or is everybody different?
Well, everybody's a bit different, but what I see is people are kind of reclusive about this disorder, and then once they get and they're less excited about using this reverse vacuum cleaner called positive airway pressure device for the rest of their life, right? So they're not very excited about that. But I can tell you, I've had patients that have just the titration for one night, and they wake up in the morning and they feel so recharged and so supercharged and so ready to take on the day that they physically will not give us the machine back. they won't give us the treatment machine back because they feel that it's kind of addictive. I mean, once you start using CPAP and it really works for you, then it's like a drug. It's a good drug. It's not a bad drug. It's a good drug because
they feel so much better.
Yeah. So you wake up in the morning, you feel great, and it's something these machines last for at least 5 years. Insurance companies pay for them. They also pay for the diagnosis. And I wanted to spend a little time talking about Medicare's landmark decision that they just made in March of this year. Medicare has just decided that in-home testing should be, and now is, a reimbursable procedure for Medicare beneficiaries.
Robert, I do want to speak about that, but I need to identify the radio station. I hope you don't mind for a moment or two.
Sure.
This is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rivas, Chief Financial Editor. The name of my firm is called the Atherton Wealth Planning. You can contact me via email at raymond.rivas, that's R-I-V-A-S, at lpl.com. You're listening to syndicatednews.net. And now back to our guest, Mr. Robert Koenigsberg, CEO of SleepQuest, Inc. Before we get into the Medicare view, has the equipment for SleepQuest apnea evolved over the last several years, Robert?
Tremendously. When I started this business, there were two masks that patients wear at night. There were two masks that were available by two different manufacturers. Now there's 15 different manufacturers, and there's 25 different masks. There was like two devices, and now there's 8 to 10 different manufacturers and all sorts of different types of devices. So the industry has grown tremendously. The most important thing as far as the patient, the devices kept getting quieter and quieter and quieter. Mm-hmm. And now they have them down to 25 decibels, which is, you can't even really hear it. I have poor hearing, but in general, you can't really hear it at 25 decibels. And the masks have become much more comfortable, and they're not really masks anymore. A lot of people use what are called nasal pillow systems, and it's a couple of pillows that go in your nostrils, so it's much less obtrusive. And anyway.
Can we get those products? Can people buy those products on the Internet, or do they have to go directly into your office?
Well, no. What they have to do first is they can fill out that questionnaire we talked about earlier and then take that to their primary care physician. Explain to their primary care physician that they want to have a diagnostic sleep study to rule in or rule out obstructive sleep apnea because they snore and they've been told they stop breathing and they have hypertension and they wake up in the morning with headaches. And so then the doctor sends us the prescription. This can be anybody in the country. And we then check their insurance to make sure their insurance will pay for it, at least 80% or whatever their PPO or HMO will pay. And then we mail the equipment to them. And so they can then use it that night that they receive it, return it to us in a UPS box with a prepaid label in it, and then once we get it, we download it, and then our board-certified sleep physicians interpret the data. We send that report to the referring physician who wrote the prescription, and then we empower that physician to be able to then go from that original diagnosis that the physician has made to the titration to providing the patient with treatment. The insurance companies pay for the entire process, and then once they get on treatment, then there's a what we call, we have a department that we started that's called ongoing care. These things are like fads. The masks are like fads. When people have sleep apnea, they want to try the various masks. They want to get better, so there's numerous different masks. So the insurance companies pay for new masks, tubes, filters, all these different accessories once every 3 or 6 months. So it's an ongoing process.
So you have physicians that will interpret that. Do you have any other sleep care specialists that work with you?
Yeah, that's actually our people that we hire and we train and teach. This is all they do is take care of patients with sleep apnea. So I came up with a new title for these sorts of people, and I call them sleep care specialists. And so we have these people that I call our sleep care coaches, because they're basically working as a coach with the patient to get them well.
Mm-hmm. Do they have to go to university to get this the specialization certificate, or do you train them on the job, or how does that work?
Well, a little of both. We're in the process right now of setting up an educational process and a process where they will become certified. And right now the state of California, where we're located, requires that we have what's called a home medical device retail license. So we have to apply for the license, and then each of our clinicians have to take a test with the state of California and pass that in order to provide care.
So they do have to take an examination.
Right, right. There is.
So just not anybody can walk in and be a sleep care specialist unless they go through a procedure so that you know that they're highly qualified, so therefore they serve the your patients.
Right. And
okay. Now, I noticed that your offices are located in San Carlos, California. Do you have other offices that you have, and where do you expect to be in the future?
So we have four field offices right now, and the four field offices are in San Francisco, which we just opened in July, Fresno, California in the Central Valley, and Salinas up near Monterey Carmel, and then, of course, in San Carlos we have our fourth. And so where do I see this going? Well, I see the need to have this local presence with these field offices as mostly important to get us where we are now and get us well-known in the medical field and to get us to have a reputation as providing quality care. But now what I'm looking to do is open this up to the masses, to the millions of people across the country that are suffering. And that's why we're using the power of the Internet and radio blogs like this to get the information out to the millions and millions of people that are struggling in their lives and could find tremendous amount of relief from treatment.
So how does someone in New York or Philadelphia or Miami, what do you recommend for them, since you don't have a field office there? How would they get hold of you, or how could they find relief from somebody in California?
Is, right, right. So we've been helping those patients, and what they do is they take the questionnaire, the answers to the questionnaire, they take it to their primary care physician, get a prescription, they fax it to our office, we check the insurance. Once we check the insurance and we're able to do it, we mail the equipment to New York. The patient does the study over one night, returns the equipment to us, and then after they return the equipment to us, we put it through our process to have it interpreted, and then we send the data to their referring primary care physician. And then the primary care physician then meets with the patient to talk about next steps. If they determine that they want to try CPAP therapy or continuous positive airway pressure therapy, then they order a titration test from us, and we, again, mail the equipment to New York. The patient then is instructed, and tremendous amount of follow-up is done through the phone, and we don't need to actually see the person. We've done this for so many years, and we have this down to a science that we don't need to see them. We can... with an algorithm and a bunch of questions and answers about their current situation, such as, are you claustrophobic?
Right.
Do you breathe through your mouth?
Mm-hmm.
are you a do you have a deviated septum? Questions like that help us to determine what interface would be best for them.
Well, and well then they're very we detailed, get, huh?
Then we get them in the right therapy. They then we send to their primary care physician what mm-hmm. device and what pressure we recommend. The doctor mm-hmm. meets with them, says, how did it go? And the patient in New York says, it went great. I woke up and I felt good. And I'd love to try this. And so, well, let's try it for a few months. So he writes a prescription and faxes it to us for a treatment device. We then mail the treatment device to New York mm-hmm. and work with the patient very closely for the first 30 days and ongoing for 1 year to make sure that they're adherent to the therapy.
Well, honest to God, this internet is such a useful instrument that it's amazing you're able to do this for anywhere from California to New York to Texas to wherever else these people happen to be. I do have a question. What do people say when you tell them that you're the CEO of SleepQuest? How do you describe your company to someone who's just sitting across the way from you? What do you say to these folks? This is what I do.
Well, I explain to them that what I do is help human beings with their lives, and it's tremendously gratifying. And we diagnose and treat patients in a 2 or 3 week period. We get them mm-hmm. well, and there's a tremendous amount of satisfaction I get from being able to take somebody who's, say, 50 pounds overweight and doesn't know mm-hmm. why, and mm-hmm. their metabolism is down, and they may be depressed. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden, through this test and then getting them on treatment, I get them on a positive circle instead of a negative vicious circle. Their mm-hmm. metabolism increases. They start to lose weight. They start to exercise. Their mm-hmm. relationships improve.
Mm-hmm.
And having these patients come back to us and tell us mm-hmm. their stories of how their lives have turned around is tremendously gratifying.
So what makes you proudest of SleepQuest?
What makes me the most proud is as I said earlier, is and I know is going when I go to sleep at night is thinking that I've helped all these thousands of people. Now that's kind of that's one thing, but what will make me happiest moving forward is to get it to the point where 50% of the patients with sleep apnea in this country are diagnosed and treated.
And 15 million. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people, and it can't be done through sleep laboratories. It can be done. We can get hundreds of diagnostic testing devices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a question of the amount of equipment we get. So we're looking to raise capital and to continue to grow this, grow our various departments in the company and build our software and our IT network and our infrastructure. And so it's an exciting 15, place to be, but it's been
15,
a tremendous amount of work over the 15 years. A lot of
that's a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. Now, I wanted to talk to you before we complete our dialogue tonight or our conversation. Tell me about Medicare. What's going on with Medicare? Because it seems like that ought to be something that's available to people who don't have an awful lot of money, but maybe Medicare can help. Can you touch on that for a little bit?
So when I started this company close to 15 years ago, I thought in 3 to 5 years, Medicare will approve home testing. And I've held out for 15 years until the government got smart. And when I say they got smart in approving home testing, what they finally realized is that they spent twice as much money each year on testing as they did on treatment. And that if they could reverse that and get more people on treatment, they could reduce hospitalization costs. They could reduce chronic conditions in this country that are costing our healthcare system and make you know, make it a $3 trillion system, there's a lot of waste. And so I want to applaud Medicare and applaud the government for moving in this direction. And what it does, if you're in the health sector, you realize that what Medicare does ends up trickling down to all the insurance companies across the land. So now we're in negotiations and discussions with all sorts of insurance people that would not even take my phone call 5 years ago, because there is a tremendous need or tremendous desire from the existing sleep physicians and the existing marketplace to keep the status quo in place. And
well, what does Medicare do for us? What does it do for does it help in the diagnosis? Do they pay for it?
Right. So,
what exactly does Medicare do for you?
Sure. So we've been providing treatment for 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so they pay for treatment already. Up until March of 2008, they required that patients go to a sleep laboratory to be tested for sleep apnea and for any sleep disorder. So now what they're saying is that a patient can be tested in the home and then treated also in the home, and that they will pay for that. There's
okay.
a big argument going on, they're taking public comment that expired on September 1st, where I entered a public comment, and it's on my blog on our website at sleepquest.com, where they're asking, should healthcare remain fragmented? Should the company that provides the diagnosis also be able to provide the treatment?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
what they think is that we have an ability to commit fraud by doing the diagnostic test and then falsifying the information to then set up more treatment devices.
And oh, my gosh.
And so what I've done is I've sent them a letter saying that no physician in the land wants to lose their medical license from
mm-hmm.
acting that way, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, the importance of providing a continuum of care and providing the high outcomes that SleepQuest is known for greatly outweighs the
mm-hmm.
the chance of any sort of fraudulent activity. So I think, I'm hoping that Medicare will allow us to do both. And if that happens, then we will do both. But we won't know that until the end of September. And if it turns out that they don't allow us to do both, then we'll do the treatment and we won't provide the testing. And so
mm-hmm.
the testing will continue to have to be fragmented to a sleep laboratory or some other in-home provider that
mm-hmm.
doesn't do treatment. And
mm-hmm.
so that's the one thing I wanted to say that I didn't say earlier is that the patients that come to a sleep lab, 90% of them, the patients that go to a sleep lab, have
mm-hmm.
at least 90%, have a sleep-related breathing disorder that SleepQuest
mm-hmm.
can take care of. The other 10%, roughly, have a neurologic disorder that we don't take care of. We don't monitor and we don't treat. And so what
mm-hmm.
we're trying to do is work as complements to the sleep lab. And we work very closely with Stanford in helping their patients and referring lots of patients that come through our system that we can't help because they have narcolepsy, they have REM sleep behavior
mm-hmm.
disorder, they have neurologic sleep disorders, of which there's 85 different neurologic-based sleep disorders. And so sleep is very expansive, and there are lots of different disorders. What I'm focusing on is the 90% of patients that we can help, and
mm-hmm.
not and the other 10% I'm letting the sleep laboratories handle those patients. We don't need 25 sleep labs within San Francisco.
Are there 25 sleep labs?
At least.
What's the waiting time on the sleep labs as opposed to you?
Well, it's gone down quite a bit over the years. It's still a 3-month wait log at some of the better and more popular centers, but other centers, 3 or 4 weeks. But it's not just that. I mean, one thing is the wait to get in. But then after you get in, instead of having your primary care physician direct your care, then you have to wait to get the report to be sent from the sleep center to your primary care physician.
How long does that take?
That usually takes 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
The whole process, there's a study by a guy named Flemons that showed that in the United States, the average time it takes from the time a doctor, a primary care physician, writes a prescription for a sleep study to the time the patient gets on treatment with the sleep lab in the existing fragmented system is six months.
Six months.
And with our system...
That's a long time.
Pardon me?
That's a long time.
Yeah, and with our system, it takes 3 to 4 weeks. And so in that six-month period, you've got people that... The biggest danger here is they can fall asleep at the wheel. I mean, you read about every day the guy who hit the middle pylon on the Bay Bridge. I mean, in the bay on the boat, he was said to have sleep apnea. Another gentleman that was a CHP, a highway patrol, fell asleep at the wheel and killed a bicyclist in Palo Alto about 2 months ago. So these accidents are happening all the time because people that obstruct 400 times a night wake up more tired than when they went to bed and end up not being able to keep their eyes open while they're driving
a
2,000-pound car.
Do you have physicians on your advisory board?
Yeah, Dr. DeMent, of course, and then we also have one of the physicians that reads our studies is a doctor named Kin, K-I-N-U-N, and she works at the Stanford Sleep Center as well as she works at a local sleep clinic, and she reads and interprets our studies. Then we have another doctor who's actually a pulmonologist with an MBA, and he helps us with medical affairs. So he helps us with the negotiations with the insurance companies, and he talks doctor to doctor, which is very important with insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our listeners are probably saying there's so much to learn about sleep apnea. Most of them probably didn't realize how dangerous this could really be, and they probably didn't know that they could find a facility like yours that could help them right away by going on the Internet. That's the first step. Number two, to work with their own providers and to know that there's people like yourself who are really dedicated to making sure that the sleep apnea will be resolved. You said there's 30 million Americans that are out there. It makes you wonder how many people in the world have got this major problem. Before we close the conversation for this evening, Robert, would you be very kind to give us your website again so that people can find you?
Sure. My email address?
Your website.
Or website is www.sleepquest.com. And you can also go to our website and respond to contact@sleepquest.com, and we will read your emails if you have any particular questions. You can also call us at 1-800-OSA, which stands for Obstructive Sleep Apnea, TEST, T-E-S-T. So OSA TEST. I don't have a phone pad in front of me to tell you what the numbers are, but OSA TEST, it's a free call. They can contact us in the morning, and we can talk more about it and help.
Before I leave you, is there anything you wanted to say or do you think we've covered things that you wanted to cover, for our listeners?
Well, the last thing I'd like to say is that there is help out there, and the current the current success rate amongst home care companies is roughly 50% for patients that go on CPAP. Our success rate is 93%, and so
wow, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and so it's not just getting the device; it's working with the company that will get you well. And I'd like to leave with the people out there that our company is committed to get you and your family members well.
Well, I think they got that from your conversation this evening, and it's been wonderful having you as our guest. And I want to thank you for the time that you've taken to speak with us. And I'm sure that everyone listening tonight will feel they learned an awful lot from an area that can be very dangerous if it's not treated properly. So, Robert, I want to thank you again. It's been wonderful having you as one of my guests. And I think we're going to sign off now.
Okay.
And so this is Syndicated News. I'm Raymond F. Rivas, along with Mr. Robert Koenigsberg, CEO and President of SleepQuest, Inc. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Syndicated News, and you can contact me on my email, which is raymond.rivas@lpl.com. You've been listening to Syndicated News, and now back to our regular programming. Thank you.
Thank you.